everybody. Welcome to the Hammer and Rails podcast. I am your host, Andrew Ledman.
I'm Casey Bartley.
And we have got a special guest with us this week, writer from the site, Drew Schneider, one of our football experts. Say thanks for joining us, Drew.
Hi, guys.
Wonderful. Dynamite drop in, Drew.
One extra word and way less energy than we demanded.
Yeah, so we're off to a good start.
I'm suffering, guys. I'm my day into my post vaccine, and I'm about warmed over.
Ah,
crap.
I understand. It took me about 40 hours to feel really back to normal, so I completely get it. So before we jump into the football, which is going to be the main focus of our podcast today, we did want to give a shout-out to Madison Layden, rising sophomore from the Purdue women, who has been invited to participate in the USA Basketball Under-19 team trials. So she has the opportunity. The trials are going to be in Denver, Colorado. Actually, a week from today, they start May 14th to 16th. We are recording this on Friday, May 7th. Looks like there are going to be 27 people invited, and there are 12 women chosen for the team. So good luck to her, and hopefully we can have a Boilermaker representing Team USA at the under-19 team. So that would be great news for the women's team and some great exposure for her, and she can come back and be one of the leaders on the team next season in Coach Sharon Versip's last year. So that would be great news. Now on to kind of the reason why we brought Drew on. He's one of our football experts on the on the writing staff here at Hammer and Rails. He certainly knows more than I do. So anybody who knows more than I do, I consider an expert. So we'll just go from
there.
That
is a big field, Ledman.
Yeah, it is a low bar. So I think I'm devaluing the term expert. But, you know, it's my podcast. I can do what I want. So we'll just keep it in. Keep it in. So as you know, the transfer portal is pure chaos. I don't even know who's on the football team at this point. There's been so many exits, so many additions. So we wanted to take a little time and go over who Purdue has added and kind of what it means for the team going into the 2021 season, which seems like it's going to be a pretty important one for Jeff Brohm and his time at Purdue after things have kind of not gone the greatest these last couple seasons, and some of the fan base has already begun to sour on him. So he's really hoping for a turnaround in 2021. So we're going to start with the grad transfer kicker who is coming in, Mitchell, and I'm going to butcher most of these names because, again, I don't know who a lot of these people are. I've not seen them play. So it's Mitchell Feinran, who is coming in. He will take the place of JD Dellinger. So, you know, we needed a kicker. We got a kicker. Do you, either of you have any great insight on what we can expect from this guy?
I mean, basically after camp, the coaching staff went out and said, we have to find somebody that can reliably kick the ball. And this guy came on the market, and apparently that's what he can do. And so I think this was a case of just pure need, because I could tell with the interviews after camp that the coaching staff was not pleased with what they had coming in a kicker for next year.
I've got a couple stats that are nice.
Oh, love stats. Love stats. Let's hear them.
32 of 43 on field goal attempts over his three seasons with the Bulldogs. 74%, that's a solid C. But 109 out of 111 on extra points, so sounds like he's accurate, even if he doesn't have the biggest leg. I believe his longest kick last year was 50 yards.
Yeah, that's what I see as well. And, I mean, it's hard to kind of take a look at an entire career of field goals and not know the circumstance and not know anything about those particular kicks. But let's just hope that he can come in and kick for us, because if the coaching staff was that desperate and worried after spring ball, you know they're looking for an upgrade. And it looks like in his most recent season at Samford, he was 15 of 18 on field goal attempts. And that's something you can live with, especially for a guy who's going to come in and you don't exactly have to learn the system as a kicker, but you know, you just have to go back there and put your leg behind the ball. So hopefully it should be a quick transition for him, even though he is moving from the FCS level to I guess, is it? It's FBS still, technically.
Footballs are the same size, Ledman.
Exactly. The names are all stupid. So hopefully he comes in and he can perform just as well, if not better, than J.D. Dellinger has. So
I tell you what, if he's good, I'm willing to give Brom a new contract, because all I want out of a coach is his ability to find kicking talent.
What? You know,
I watched a lot of Ted Lasso. I'm sorry.
You talk about my low bar for the word expert. That's a low bar for a coach right there. So on the offensive side of the ball, looks like we really only have one addition that I can think is going to make an immediate impact. And he is coming from Jeff Brom's old stomping grounds. He's an offensive guard. His name is Tyler Witt. So, Drew, what do we know about this kid?
He's played a lot of football. He's out of Joliet, I believe, Illinois, so he's sort of coming back closer to home. He started 43 games for Western Kentucky, one of their most decorated offensive linemen over the last few years. He should slide right into the right guard spot, sort of like what we did a couple years ago with the Western Kentucky transfer on the offensive line, whose name escapes me at the moment.
Yeah, we've had a lot of transfers these last few years, so it's not surprising that we can't remember them all. Casey,
I've also been watching a lot of British Bake Off, so decorating, very important.
It's all about presentation on the Great British Baking Show. You want to get that handshake from Paul Hollywood, and if your cake doesn't look good, you're not going to get that handshake.
Truer words never spoken.
So I know offensive line at Purdue is always, at least recently, probably the last 5, 6, 7 years, has been something we've always worried about. Do you think this one guy is going to be enough to put our minds at ease a little bit, given the improvement that the line showed last season?
I mean, it depends if Greg Long can play left tackle. That's the big question. He came in as a right tackle, but he's played a little left tackle at UTEP before he got hurt. If he can play left tackle, I think everything will sort itself out well enough to be semi-competent. But if he struggles, then I don't know if Purdue has anybody else that can play that position.
So basically, we're one deep.
Yeah. I mean, we can start throwing bodies out there after that, or guys that have sort of played out there and not done well, or just guys that haven't played out there yet, we haven't seen, but I think Long is the plan A, B, and C, and hopefully we don't get to plan D.
Well, let's hope not. Let's hope not. So he is really, like I said, he's really the biggest addition on offense and really the only one that we think is going to make a difference. He may actually be the only player we've added from the portal on offense at this point.
We brought Dylan Downing back from UNLV.
Okay.
So he's out of Carmel. He was a three-star running back in the 2020 class, and didn't have a Purdue offer, and he went out to UNLV, and we brought him back. So, I mean, he had some high-level schools looking at him. He's a guy that he didn't play much at UNLV, 3 carries, 8 yards, but with the need at running back, it's possible you see him on the field at some point.
Yeah, we've had a lot of departures at running back, so that could definitely be a position of need. So probably the biggest impact we've seen this offseason, though, is additions on the defensive side of the ball. I believe Purdue has added 5 players from the transfer portal. So we're going to give Drew some time to talk about each one of them. Overall, I mean, what do you think before these additions came in, what was the outlook for Purdue's defense?
I mean, it was super, super thin at a lot of positions. The defensive line was I didn't know what was going to go on. The defensive line was going to struggle. And the back end, corner was going to be an issue as well. So there was a lot of makeup in the defense. And, you know, I think this new transfer rule really helped out Purdue because they were able to go back and correct some maybe some indiscretions previously in recruiting, where if you notice, a lot of the players going out are on offense and a lot of the players coming in are on defense. The roster is actually starting to balance out a little bit more, where, you know, we lose a running back and bring in a defensive tackle, or then we lose a tight end and bring in a cornerback. And that's definitely on purpose. We're trying to sort of balance out the roster on offense and defense now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I mean, it sounds like it's something that needed to be done. And we've seen the product on the field and know that for for better or worse, the defense, what we've seen on the field is what we were going to get. So
worse.
Yeah, I was trying to be generous, but just couldn't figure out a way to get there. You know, I don't want to put down the players or anything like that, but perhaps the best way of saying it is the system has failed them. You know, they've had this will be the third defensive coordinator in 3 seasons. Brohm has perhaps, in my opinion, fired Holt too early, should not have fired him. And then last year's debacle with Diaco just set the team back an entire year and put players in schemes that they weren't comfortable in, with personnel that didn't fit. And now we're restarting from scratch, where we should have been able to do this last year. You know, if they really wanted to fire Holt, he should have had someone in mind rather than getting a guy who seemingly everyone in the football world hates in Bob Diaco.
All worlds.
Not many people have anything nice to say about Bob. I've never met the man personally, but every time I mentioned his name last year, people, especially people from the Midwest, I mean, I talked to some guy from Nebraska podcast. He's like, oh God, he's awful. You'll hate him. He won't last more than a season. And he was right.
Yeah, I will never understand that hire. I don't know if perhaps, because I don't think him and Brohm had an existing relationship prior to hiring him. So
no, but he had the point that he was Poindexter coached for him.
Okay.
At UConn.
Okay.
And I think that's where the connection was.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
He's still only the second biggest asshole named Bob that's coached in Indiana, though.
Let the record show. We had low bars earlier. That's a high bar, yeah. And on the defensive side of the ball, it looks like Purdue has added at least 5 players, and they added them at positions of need. And, Drew, I know you just recently wrote an article about the defensive tackle coming in from Indiana, DeMarge Lewis. So I wonder if you can tell us what we can expect out of him.
So he's a, you know, big kid, 6'3", 300 pounds, out of Griffin, Georgia. He signed with IU. He was their top-rated defensive player in the 2020 class. So he was actually expected to play a little bit last year, but then they brought in Javon Swan from Stanford as a graduate transfer at defensive tackle. It sort of moved him out of the rotation. And so now he decided that he wants to come play for Purdue. His cousin, Brandon Calloway, I believe his name is, was in our last recruiting class. He's also a cornerback out of Griffin, Georgia. So I think that was the connection there. And also Mark Hagan, Purdue's new defensive line coach, was his primary recruiter at Indiana. So, you know, great pickup. He's an explosive kid off the ball. Indiana was going to use him as like a 3-technique defensive tackle. His job is to basically get in the backfield and blow things up. As far as defensive tackles Purdue has signed under Brohm, he's one of the better ones. He's going to be essentially a freshman coming in. So I had him lift weights and, you know, eat for a year. And now we get to garner those benefits. He can play inside. He can play at the 3-technique. I think that's his primary position, but he can also move down and play the nose guard. So It gives a little flexibility depending on what you're trying to do. Again, real athletic kid, and an upgrade for the roster, definitely.
Good. So, I mean, it sounds like he's someone who you expect to probably come in and be plugged right into the starting lineup.
I don't know if he'll start right away. I think he'll definitely be a bench piece or somebody that, you know, most teams actually rotate their defensive tackles.
It's a difficult position.
Right. Play four or five. Purdue's been trying to do it with like two and three guys recently, and it really hasn't panned out. So I think Coach Lambert wants to use a little bit of deeper rotation on the defensive line. So I don't know if he'll start, but I think he'll definitely, as long as he gets the system down in camp, contribute. How much, I'm not sure as a true freshman, but I think he's definitely somebody that'll be in the rotation.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, as you said, I mean, Purdue has been so thin on the defensive tackle spot that even adding in another body, like you said, if he comes in, learns the system, and is a big and strong body, he's definitely somebody Purdue could use. So moving on from him, we've got a linebacker, O.C. Brothers, came in from Auburn. You know, we did have Derek Barnes, linebacker, left Purdue via NFL draft, so we do have at least one spot to fill there. Is he somebody who's going to come in and make an impact, or is he more of a body who's going to come in and we're going to try to find him a role in the field?
Well, he was one of the guys that everybody was talking about in spring camp as being, you know, standing out. He's a hyper-athletic dude. He runs like a 4.5. Or that's what he ran in high school. I don't know. He's a lot bigger now. He's out of Florida. Three-star linebacker. Went to Auburn. And, you know, you go to Auburn as a three-star linebacker, you better be way better than your rating. Otherwise, you're just going to take you 4 years to get on the field. And so I think he probably found that out rather quickly and decided to look for some more playing time. And I think he could be a guy that comes in and challenges for a starting position. He's, you know, 6'1", 230, runs, he'll be an off-the-ball linebacker. And also with Mitchell moving down to play on the defensive line, there's two, basically, linebacker spots available. And so I could definitely see him taking the off-ball linebacker spot with his ability to, you know, play the run, but also be good in coverage with his speed and athleticism.
Okay, so it sounds like we are actually plugging holes on this team with these transfers. They're not just, we need bodies, so grab whoever you can off the transfer portal. So looking at next, it looks like Purdue has two cornerbacks coming in. First one, we're going to talk about Jamari Brown from Kentucky.
I really like Jamari. I think he could be a star. He played a good bit for Kentucky on a really good Kentucky defense, not last season, but the season before. He's like a 6'3" cornerback, which is what everybody's looking for these days, to go out, compete with those big wide receivers and be strong in the run game. And he can do both of those things. Last year, he had a hamstring injury and then sort of dropped down the depth chart. I think he was looking for a new start, but definitely a guy to keep an eye on. I'm not sure if he starts, but I do think he'll be in the rotation, that corner rotation early. Again, Purdue's been playing pretty bare bones on defense as far as rotations go. But I think this season you're going to see Coach Lambert really try to get more players involved, so you don't see the first quarter looks good, second quarter looks good, third quarter they're hanging on, and fourth quarter they're falling apart.
Yeah, I would say that's sort of been a hallmark of Purdue for quite a few years now. Since that depth is, well, just not there, more like a kiddie pool than a swimming pool.
Right.
So the next cornerback that's come in is C.J. McWilliams, and he previously was at Florida. So, you know, I mean, before you get into him, I mean, we got guys from a pretty good Kentucky team, Florida, Auburn, and, as much as I hate to admit it, a fairly good IU team. So these are transfers from, you know, pretty good schools. So that's got to make you feel a little good at least. Regardless, anyway, C.J. McWilliams from Florida, what do we know about him?
He has a very interesting career at Florida. He's quite a polarizing figure for a guy that didn't play a whole lot. He played that slot corner position in Florida's defense for Ron English, who is now the defensive back coach at with Purdue. So that's where why he's McWilliams with the team. He's a guy who wasn't highly touted. Florida brings in a lot of 4-star defensive backs, 5-star defensive backs. He is sort of a medium low third star guy. They wanted him to play slot corner, and he kept winning the job and then losing it. He'd win it, and then there was one Georgia game in particular that he just had a rough day. When you have a rough day against Georgia, they might put up 4 touchdowns on you, and I think that's what happened. And so he sort of moved down the line, and then he tore his Achilles tendon.
Oh.
As a I think he's a sophomore and sort of fought back from that and was in position last year. He started the first game for Florida, and then I'm not really sure what happened. He just opted out and decided to transfer, grad transfer. So I don't, it was a bit of a tumultuous time in Gainesville, but I think if you've got the talent to win the starting job in Florida, you've got some definite ability. He'll come in, and I think he'll probably start at that slot corner position. He's a little smaller, speed and the quickness to sort of cover those inside slot guys. So it'll be between him and probably maybe Dedrick Mathew to see who gets that spot.
Okay, so I mean, again, it sounds like a guy who is very talented and can hopefully come in and make a difference on a team that, quite frankly, if nothing else, could use his depth in order to stay fresh in the third and fourth quarter. So we've got one more guy to talk about, and he's going to be the second defensive lineman Purdue has added, and it's going to be Joseph Anderson, formerly of South Carolina. And before we started recording, you indicated that he is the one who you think could have the biggest impact or could be the best get for Purdue. So do you want to explain why that is?
I mean, Anderson is a 4-star guy. If he were in one of Purdue's recruiting classes, I think he'd be top 10 all time as far as rating. Yeah, he'd be the Purdue's sixth best recruit ever
Wait, in like in Purdue history?
since the
Since they
247
started rating, yeah.
rating. So 2000 looks like 2001. Kyle Orton is on the list, so in the last 20 years,
Oh, wow.
and so that's God, looking at Purdue's really been snake bitten in their top 10.
Yeah, I don't know. I bet Kyle Williams is on there, isn't he?
Well, let's see. Selwyn Lyman is number one.
Excellent.
Doug Van Dyke is number two, who never played a snap at
Yep.
Purdue. JB Paxton is number six, who never played a snap
Never
at
played a
Purdue.
snap.
And Malik Carr is number seven.
Wow.
But Joseph Anderson would be number six. And
There we go. We'll slot him in.
we'll slide him in above old JB, push him down the line a little bit. Anderson is a guy that is going to play defensive end or defensive tackle. He's 6'3", 275 pounds. So about the same, a little shorter, but George Karloftis sized defensive end. And he's supposed to be really scheme flexible. So that means you can play him at defensive end if you want, especially against a team that's going to run the ball a lot. He holds up well against the run with his size. He's not super like bendy, explosive like Karloftis is. So his best spot's probably going to be inside, playing one of the defensive tackle positions, probably the three technique as well. And so another guy that he's stronger than he is, at least when he was coming in. Reputation was a guy that was just super strong, maybe not the most refined skill wise, but definitely, I mean, he was, played at the opening and was definitely an elite recruit, top 150 recruit in his recruiting class. So he was a huge pickup, and would, like I said, be one of the top recruits in Purdue history, and just basically what they're getting is a guy. He played one game in 2019. He played three games in 2020. But this guy with talent, South Carolina, hasn't been a good football team, but they have had a lot of good talent on the defensive line, and so he's sort of got stuck in a shuffle behind a couple of five-star kids, and decided to come grab some playing time at Purdue. I think he's a guy that could start again, depending on how he gets the system down, but should definitely be in the rotation. It'll help Purdue out a lot against run-heavy teams, holding up in the middle, slide inside, and get some good pass rush from the defensive tackle spot.
Good, good. I mean, when we saw last season when Big George Karlaftis went down, how much that changed the defense. So if we can get people to help him out, take away some of the double teams that he faced, and maybe get any sort of pressure on the quarterback, it can change the face of the defense entirely. So what, we talked about what you thought of the defense coming into the season with these five additions on the defensive side of the ball. What do you think that does for the outlook of the defense, what the defense can be?
Jeff Brohm has been talking up the defense being a lot more aggressive this year.
I heard we're going to light the field on fire with gasoline or something like that.
That's the rumor.
Is that what it was about?
It's just I think it was like intensity, and we're going to light the field on fire.
Oh, I thought we were going to save money and get rid of the program.
I think you'll need a little bit more than gasoline for that.
Not if you're creative enough.
So that's what we're going to do, though, is I guess we're going to go out and play. We're going to be a little bit more aggressive and try to get off the quarterback, send some more. Lambert's got an interesting scheme where he's got three down linemen that are pretty much always with their hand in the dirt, and then a fourth guy who's going to be DeMarcus Mitchell, who sort of roams around the defensive line. So he might line up as a defensive end, or he might slide in and sort of blitz the A-gap, or he might slide all the way outside, just depending on what Lambert wants to do. So that should be – it'll be interesting. It's not like your traditional four-man front, but not Bob Diaco's, three-man front either. You should be able to get a little more pressure. So I think Karlaftis and Mitchell are probably our two best defensive players, having them both out there on the line of scrimmage should help a lot.
So just to be clear, to go back to the fire thing, instead of being basketball on grass, we're going to be bonfire on grass.
On glass. I think the idea is we're going to put gasoline on the field, and then when the team runs out through the big train, they're going to still have the fireworks, and they're going to see if the field catches on fire and use it as kind of an intimidation tactic.
Are we calling this field the furnace again?
We're bringing back the furnace, but this time it's going to be real. Because that was the best thing that Hazel ever did, was try to make the furnace happen.
It did not happen.
It did not.
Happen, but I think the defense with the more depth should be in a better position to attack. This should be the best defense Brahms had at Purdue. Talent wise, I think the defense probably has just as much on frontline talent as the offense this year. So
yeah, and that's not something we've been able to say. His defense was good the first season. They were great against the run. That was a lot of players who were holdovers, of course, from the Hazel era, who Brohm and Holt were able to get much more out of than Hazel was. But, when those players went away, you saw the defense slowly get a little bit worse each season. So hopefully now they've got enough of their players in, and they can hopefully build to the defense that they want, even though, like I said, we are going to be on the third defensive coordinator in three seasons under Brohm.
Yes or no, we're going to be the worst team with two top 20 picks in the NFL next year.
I mean, that's a – how many teams are there with two top 20 picks?
I don't think we'll get two top 20 picks, but, yeah.
For the record, I don't either.
Okay. My follow-up question was going to be, if you said no, whether that's because we wouldn't get two top 20 picks or not.
Yeah, I don't think definitely not. But Carl Loftus, I mean, he is projected to be a top five NFL pick. So, I mean
– Top five?
What? I saw him at 14 five. Last time.
I've seen him anywhere between like 5 and 10.
I'll believe that when it happens. I mean, I love Big George, but I want to see more.
I mean, well, that's sort of everybody. If you look what he did, as a freshman, he put out the best freshman stats of any defensive end in the nation. And then obviously he lost a whole season last year. But if he's able to recreate or surpass what he did as a freshman, those numbers are off the charts for a guy his size and as athletic as he is. 50 tackles, 17 and some half tackles for loss, 7.5 sacks. That's a guy coming out of, and not even a guy coming out of a big high school. That's a kid transferring or going from West Lafayette to Purdue and not missing a beat.
Well, how many Mormon quarterbacks are there first before we know if he's going to go in the top five?
I'm sure they have like a 45-year-old dude coming back that's ready to go, but
it's gonna make it more tough.
Yeah, but and with all the so he's got the potential, and that's what makes this defense. That's what the defense really hinges on. You got a guy that talented. You gotta ride him if he can get.
Yeah, you gotta use him.
If you can get 12 to 15 sacks out of him, which is what he would need probably to be a top 5-10 pick. There's a whole different defense. The secondary gets better, the run defense gets easier. So if he's healthy and ready to go, defense could be really good.
Yeah.
If everything happens to him, it could all fall apart like it did last year as well. So yeah. It really hinges on how good he is coming back.
Yeah. And like you said, if Karloftis has a season like he did his freshman year or surpasses it, it makes everyone else's job that much easier because so much of what the offense is going to do is focused on him. Then you've got these new guys like Anderson who can maybe get more opportunities to get through the line, get to the quarterback, maybe stop the run. And then, you go on back through the defense. It makes the linebacker's job easier. It makes the cornerback's job easier, the safety's job easier. So hopefully, having one player who can actually make a damn difference on the field on defense can really change things up for this team. So now, last thing before we get to the recommendation, which don't worry, Casey, it's my turn and I've already got it covered. What do we think of this next season as a whole? I mean, I'm not asking you to guarantee anything, but I want each of you, I've got the schedule in front of me. What do you think we can realistically look forward to? Obviously, we assume it's going to be a full 12-game season. There's no reason to think that next season is going to be impacted by a pandemic or anything like that. So we've got 12 games, and I'm wondering, can we get back to a bowl game? Can we at least go 6-6?
So I'll give you a range. I think that best case scenario, everything goes right, plays absolutely the best football we could play. I think it could be an 8-win team. Worst case scenario where everything goes wrong and injuries to key players again, I think four wins is probably the floor. So yeah, I think I'll put us at 6 wins, playing for 7 at a bowl game. I think that is very doable, if not a little conservative of an estimate.
All right, no. Casey, what are your thoughts? Just no.
No. The pastry is overcooked and the inside's raw.
Wow. Wow. So do we have a soggy bottom?
Huh? Soggy bottom. It's leaking out. We could actually use a furnace.
Wow. All right. Casey is not optimistic. I tell you, I'm looking at the schedule, and I'll kind of follow Drew's lead. I'll do a best case, worst case. I think best case scenario is following the IU game, we've got 7 wins. I think that is the absolute best I can see Purdue doing. And that's, again, like Drew said, that's if everything goes right, if everyone stays healthy, and if things really do work out in Purdue's favor, I can see us having 7 wins if everything goes our way, the ball bounces our way. Worst case scenario, let me just do a quick look at the schedule here. I mean, worst case scenario, I think four wins. Right. Yeah, I think 4-8 is a worst case scenario.
How do you guys get to 4 as a worst case?
I mean,
that seems highly optimistic. We have like 4.5 offensive linemen.
I mean, look who's on the schedule. The Oregon State.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Terrible. And then who else? Go through it real quick, Letterman, and I can start it.
I'll do the whole schedule. So no interruptions. We got Oregon State at home, UConn on the road, Notre Dame on the road, Illinois at home, Minnesota at home, Iowa on the road, Wisconsin at home, Nebraska on the road, Michigan State at home, Ohio State on the road, Northwestern at Wrigley, and then IU at home.
Am I missing something?
Well, I think you're overestimating how good Oregon State and UConn are.
You're telling me every team in the Big Ten couldn't beat us.
No. I mean,
who besides Illinois sucks?
I mean, how many times have we beat Iowa? Like every time we played them under Brawl?
I honestly don't know.
Yeah, I think the offense is good enough to get to 4 wins. I think that the combination of David Bell and George Karlaftis, those two, you'll get to 4 wins. I think you got enough playmakers to get there.
And I would also say, I mean, as far as the Big Ten goes, I mean, let's not pretend like teams like Illinois, Minnesota, Iowa, and Nebraska are world beaters.
But they're all programs that have been better than us.
I mean, Illinois just had a coaching change, so they've got Brett Bielema as their head coach now.
When has losing Lovie Smith ever been a bad thing?
Yeah, but replacing him with Bielema, who has not had a stellar post-Wisconsin career.
No, but he had a really good career in the Big Ten.
Got the table set.
The team in the national championship.
I just think it's absurd to think that our floor is that high. There is absolutely a way that we win 2 games next year.
No, I don't see it.
I don't think so.
We were playing a 4-string quarterback like 2 years ago. And then decided to start him next year.
We were playing a 4-string quarterback, and we were still in most games.
I mean, Purdue has the most quarterback depth in the nation, probably. We have like 4 guys that have legit started football, like D1 football games. So, with something,
whether that's good or not,
but we could definitely go down. We could lose 2 quarterbacks. And I'm not sure there's much of a difference between the first guy and the third guy.
Again,
I just don't think we can lose a single lineman, and we lose like 3 every year.
I mean, the whole line's back from last year that, like Andrew said, was better, I think, than people anticipated, at least when they went back and looked at the film. So you've got that.
I think, to be honest, they were the surprise of the 2020 season for me, because the way they played in 2019 was – not abysmal, but just above. I mean, they were leaky the entire time, and anytime it seems like a play was made on offense, it was because the quarterback was moving around or we got the ball to Rondale Moore within like a second of a snap. So David Bell as well. But when they played last year, they got better throughout the season. And as Drew said, with everyone on that line coming back, you have to assume
I'm just going
to
say this.
You have to assume they're going to be better.
So despite that, all makes sense. 4 makes sense if you believe that we are going to win every game we should. But every year Brown's been a coach, we have lost a game we should have won. I don't have trust in him that fair. We're not going to not do that again.
That Oregon State and UConn are worse than any team that we've lost to. Like, I mean, even when we went out to Nevada, that quarterback that came in and lit Purdue up. He's going to go in the first two rounds of the NFL draft. Like, he's, you know, that's where he's projected. So it's not like, yeah, we definitely should have beaten Nevada, but he's a star quarterback, and he sort of led them back to beat us. And then even that Eastern Michigan team had Max Crosby, who's, you know, the starting defensive end for the Raiders now. And, you know, he was a guy that tore us up in the pouring rain. So I think that, first of all, yeah, UConn and Oregon State are just bad. They're bad. They can't score. And I think you're going to have to score to upset Purdue. I don't think either of those teams can score. And so that's why I'm more comfortable with these guys. Barring a hurricane or...
Yeah, I mean, I got to kind of echo what Drew said there. Plus, Oregon State and UConn are very bad. They will be very bad again next season. They were very bad in 2020. So those two alone should hopefully, you know, build some confidence in the team, let some players get some reps. Hopefully we maintain a good, healthy core through those games. And then, of course, that third week we play Notre Dame, which I do not anticipate that going well. But, you know, from there we'll see how it goes. Then we get into the Big Ten season. And it's, like I said, it's not like most of the Big Ten are world beaters. Of course, we, you know, have to go to Ohio State, which is going to be extremely tough. But, I mean, Purdue has played IU, Northwestern, Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, Illinois. They've played all of those teams very tough in recent years. So it's not as if we're going to get our doors blown off by these teams just when you look at the matchup. So I feel fairly confident that the floor is going to be four wins. So I don't know how likely they are to get to my ceiling of seven, but I feel confident in saying the floor is four.
Yeah, if I were to put, I think 25% chance they just make the floor, I'd say 50% chance they go six and probably put the other 25 or more than six wins. So that's sort of where I would distribute my points.
All right. So looks like we've got Drew with the most optimistic take, Casey with the most pessimistic take, and me somewhere right in the middle. So there you go. There's your look at the 2021 Purdue football season. We will have more as we get closer to, and we will probably bring Drew back on, because as you can tell, he knows more about this than Casey and I do. But Casey and I like to talk a lot, so we don't want to keep giving the spotlight to other people. So before we head out on this episode, we do like to end the show on a recommendation. It is my week. And just like I did with my first choice, I'm again going with a TV show that you may or may not have heard of. It is actually a British TV show that is on Netflix, so you can find it on there. And as it is a British television show, there are not many episodes. There's only 25, but there are five seasons. So it is The IT Crowd. Have either of you ever watched The IT Crowd?
Yeah, I think my nerdy wife might watch that.
Is that the sketch comedy-like one?
No, not at all.
Am I thinking of... What'd you call it?
The IT Crowd. Now Casey is furiously Googling to see...
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. That is very sketch comedy-like.
Oh, no, not at all.
Yes,
I don't think you know what sketch comedy is. Saturday Night Live is sketch comedy.
I know what it is. I'm saying the humor is like barely above sketch comedy.
Oh, that's offensive. The IT Crowd is, to me, one of the funniest shows I've ever seen. So it is basically these two nerds who work in IT, and their female boss, who has never worked in IT and basically gets a promotion to run the department, and goes down there, and obviously it's like a workplace comedy, so they become reluctant friends and blah, blah, blah. And you may know a couple of the people who are on there. Noel Fielding, the guy who Casey actually becomes one of the hosts on Great British Baking Show, is on it. And then Matt Berry, who you've probably seen him. He's in a lot of stuff. He's in the FX show What We Do in the Shadows as like the main vampire on that show, if anybody watches that. But this is just, like I said, it's one of the funniest shows I think I've ever seen. It started in 2006, so it's about 15 years old at this point, but it is so funny. And if you just want to try to watch one episode, let me give you one episode to kind of see if you want to get into it. This is one of my favorites. I got to find the actual name of it and tell you where it is. Okay, so the one I'm telling you to watch if you want to try to get an idea of if this is the show for you, season 2, episode 1, titled The Workouting. It's only 24 minutes long, and if you don't laugh at this episode, it's not for you, and that's fine. You know, not everything has to be for everybody. But watch this episode. It's 24 minutes long, and thank me later because I guarantee you will enjoy it. So there you go.
Hold on. You can't make an asterisk and then guarantee you'll enjoy it. It's one or the other.
Okay, fine. Not everyone will enjoy it, but I think it's quite enjoyable. Don't get on me with your semantics, Casey. I'm not here for it. Don't take away my joy.
I'm just saying, I thought we'd last more than 3 episodes in before we got a stinker of a reference.
You recommended a recipe podcast last week.
It's really good.
So I don't want to hear it.
A lot of people listen to podcasts.
Yeah, I do too. But
and a lot of people eat food.
I think the jury's still out on food.
Okay.
So that is the recommendation. The IT Crowd, you can find it on Netflix. I think it's great. Casey thinks it's garbage. Drew is not sure.
So she probably gives it a thumbs up.
There you go. So Drew's wife likes it. I'll count that as 2 out of 3. We'll go from there. Exactly. So that is all for this week. We will be back next week. So for myself, Casey, and Drew, thanks for joining us. Make sure to like, rate, and hammer that subscribe button. We'll see you next week, folks. Are you going to say barbecue sauce?
Barbecue sauce.